We continue our study in the 25th chapter of 1 Samuel, and the setting for this passage is that David is hiding out from Saul. He's in the wilderness of Paran, very near to a place called Carmel. And there's a man in that area named Nabal, who's a descendant of Caleb, who is very rich and has many possessions. He is now shearing his sheep, which means that he's going to have a lot of provisions there for his shearers. And so David sends messengers to Nabal and simply asks them to give him some provisions. They'd like to have bread, they'd like to have some food to eat, and they'd like to have water. And Nabal flatly turns them down. He uses offensive language. He says, "Who is this David?" And he also accuses them of turning away from their masters and not being the proper servants that they should be. And so this is very offensive to David. And David decides that he's going to, with 400 of his men, take swords and go and slay Nabal and all the males. Well, this news is brought to Nabal's wife, Abigail. Abigail was a woman who was wise. She had a good understanding. She was a very beautiful woman. And so she decides to take matters into her own hands and to prevent this great slaughter that's going to come at the hands of David. She's going to act with wisdom and judgment and prudence, even if her husband doesn't have these qualities. So we begin with verse 18. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed and 5 measures of parched corn and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on asses. So we see that she makes quite an effort here to provide for and to appease David and his men. She does not want them to vent their anger and their wrath upon her family, upon her servants, as well as her husband. So she makes very elaborate preparations here to prevent this. She took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine. Now this 2 bottles of wine really means 2 casks of wine, and 5 sheep ready dressed, and 5 measures of parched corn. And then on top of that, she got 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs. So she had the sweet goods as well as the staple things like the bread and the wine. And they were loaded up on the animals, ready to travel, ready to carry to David. And she said unto her servants, "Go on before me, behold, I come after you." So she's going to be personally involved in delivering these things to David. The servants are going to go with her and help her, but she's going to go along. She's going to be the one that does the talking, the one that makes the plea and intervenes with David for her husband in order to prevent this terrible thing that David has set out to do. As we mentioned earlier, this revenge that David's going to get upon Nabal and his servants is really not in the true character of David. David seems to be not acting like himself, and it's not a good thing that he's planning to do, but this woman is going to do all in her power to prevent it. But she told not her husband Nabal. Now, Nabal was a man who didn't have good judgment. He was a man who had already offended David. He's the one who'd used the abusive language toward David's servants. And so it'd be best for him just not to know this. And so she was acting in her own interests, doing the very best that she needed to do. And it would not be a wise thing to tell Nabal, because he probably would have prevented her from doing this if he could have. And it was so, as she rode on the ass, that she came down by the covert of the hill, and behold, David and his men came down against her, and she met them. So they met David and his men, his army of 400, well armed with their swords, coming to do destruction. She met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him." So David was still upset about the fact that he'd done good to Nabal. He hadn't done him any harm. He had protected his goods and provisions. He had actually assisted them when he was in that area with his servants. And now Nabal had turned him down. The simplest thing, wouldn't even provide him with water and food. So he said that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him, and he hath requited me evil for good. Sure, David has been wronged here. Nabal has done the wrong thing. He's returned evil for good. He didn't even return the same favor to David that David had previously given to him. So he says, verse 22, "So and more also do God unto the enemies of David. If I leave all that pertain to him by the morning light, so much as one male person." David's not going to leave just one person alive. One male person alive. That's the vow that he takes here. And he says that God will even do more if I don't do this to this man. David feels like he has a real just and right cause here. He has made himself believe that God is with him in this thing. But actually, as we've mentioned earlier, this is out of character for David. This is a time when David is really going to go over and beyond to do harm for a deed that wasn't all that bad against him. Sure, he was mistreated. They were abused. They weren't given the provision they asked for, but it didn't seem to call for this terrible retaliation that he has planned here. So that's the situation now. Abigail is meeting David. David with his men coming to do this great destruction, and Abigail bringing the provisions that she hopes will appease David. But she also has a speech to give to David. She has a very elaborate plea that she's going to make here. And she covers many areas in this argument that she makes. Nothing is left untouched. Everything is well placed and well expressed and given in a very pertinent and pathetic way. And also given to David to the very best of her advantage. And she uses such a force of natural rhetoric as cannot be easily paralleled. This woman is making a real speech here. And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the ass and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground. So the very first thing she does here is to go through an act of true humility. She gets off of the animal, and she gets down on the ground, on her face, and bows to the ground, and fell at his feet and said, "Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be, and let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience, and hear the words of thine handmaid." So she tells David to let me take all the blame for what's happened. Blame me. If you want to do somebody some harm, do me the harm. Let me be the one who's going to take all the blame for this. Let me be responsible for it, and then let me do the speaking. Let me try to explain to you how this is and what your proper course of action should be. Let me make the plea and listen to me. Hear the words of thine handmaid. So she does several things here. Not only does she show humility, but she's willing to take the responsibility of what's happened. She's going to be responsible for her husband's actions, although they were imprudent, although they were ill-advised. She's willing to take the responsibility and to take whatever David has in the way of punishment to give for it. But at the same time, she wants then, if she's going to be responsible for it, she wants to be able to have the ability and the audience of David when she speaks. Let me speak. Listen to what I have to say. Let me try to talk some words of wisdom into you. Verse 25, "Let not, my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name, so is he." Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. Now, here's the first point of argument. Don't pay any attention to what Nabal has done. Don't let him get you upset. Don't regard him. For his name is Nabal. He's a man of Belial. He's a man that's a son of the devils. He doesn't have good judgment. And he's acted very foolishly, but that's the way he is. He's just like his name is. His name is means a fool, and so is he. And folly is with him. That's just a part of his character, part of his nature to act in such a way. It's not that he has any special enmity toward you. It's not that he's trying to do you any harm particularly. This man just doesn't have good sense. He doesn't behave in a prudent way. And so please, do not regard him. Do not place very much value upon what he does. And do not let yourself act with an action this grave based upon him, since he is so foolish. And then she further says, "But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord when thou didst send them." I didn't know that you sent men. I didn't know that you asked for provisions. I didn't see them, for if I had seen them, things would have been different. We just want you to know that we do have the ability to show hospitality. And had I simply known what the situation was, I would have shown hospitality. Things would have been different. I just didn't know. So she pleads ignorance here on her part, showing David that really they weren't all that flatly rejected. She just didn't know what the request was, and had she known, things would have been different. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies, as they that seek evil to my Lord, be as Nabal. So here she uses the plea that up to this point the Lord has held you back. You haven't really gotten to the point of shedding blood. We've had something happen here by my presence, by my intervention, by the fact that now your needs are going to be provided for. You've been held back from coming to shed blood. And she attributes this to being an intervention by the Lord. The Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood. You know, sometimes when we're so bent, so intent upon doing something that's wrong, actually the Lord may have something to happen to intervene, to hold us back, to keep us from doing that thing which is so wrong, so that we then actually are being blessed by being interfered with. And that's what it seems that here is happening to David. The Lord is withholding thee from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thine self with thine own hand. As we know, vengeance is not man's to do. David had no business trying to get vengeance here against Nabal. This was the Lord's thing to do. It's the Lord's place. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. And so it's actually a blessing then that David is being detained from doing this thing. And she's explaining that to him. And from avenging thyself with thine own hand. So she said, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. Let all your enemies be a fool like Nabal is. Let all your enemies be as harmless as Nabal is. This man is not able to do you any harm. He really didn't intend any harm. And he has made no threat to do harm to you. He just acted in a foolish way. And so your enemies, if they're all going to be as harmless as Nabal is, then you're not going to have any problems. You're not going to have any true threat to your well-being. Because Nabal can't do you any harm. He's just a fool. And if all your enemies are like he is, then you're going to be well off. And she further says in verse 27, and now this blessing which thine handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. So she asked him to take the things that she had brought here, this blessing that I brought to you, which thine handmaid hath brought to my Lord. Let it be given to the young men that follow you. It's as though maybe David, you're too great for so humble a thing as this. I know that it's not just for something to drink, something to eat that you're doing this thing. You've really been offended. But here, give it to your young men and let them have it. To the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid. Now, whatever sin has been done by Nabal, place it upon me and then forgive me. I'm asking you for forgiveness. Whatever wrong has happened, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid. Now she might not be able to speak for Nabal and to get David to forgive Nabal, but if David places the sin upon her like she's asking him to do, if he lets her be responsible for it, then she can ask him to forgive her. So forgive the trespass of thine handmaid, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house. Now she asked David for forgiveness, and she bases it upon this. You're going to be well provided for, David. You're going to not suffer any harm as a result of what's happened. God's going to take care of you. You have no reason, no need to get revenge. There's not going to be anything that you're going to help yourself by here, because the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house. You're going to have a sure house. You're going to have the kingdom. You're going to be the reigning supreme monarch of the land. Your house is going to be one that's well established. Because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Lord, and evil hath not been found in thee all thy days. One of the reasons that you're going to be so secure, one of the reasons God's going to take such good care of you, is because you are fighting the battles of the Lord. You're fighting the good fight. You're doing the things that God wants you to do. And up to this point, there has not been any evil found in thee all thy days. You've never done a foolish thing. You've never done things that actually are wrong. And so, for that reason then, please consider that you give me forgiveness for this trespass that you hold against my house. Do not get this vengeance you plan to get. You're going to be all right. God's going to take care of you. And the reason is because you have been such a good person. You haven't done evil all thy days. And you do fight the battle to the Lord. Now those would be very good qualities for any person to have found in them. Number one, to be fighting the battles of the Lord. We're all fighting battles. We're all having to stand up for what we think is right, or to fight for the principles that we believe in, or to defend the things that we think are the things that should be defended. And if we're fighting the battles of the Lord, if we're doing what God wants us to do, then of course God's going to return us good for our deeds. And so that was one of the things that she praises David for here, that he's fighting the battles of the Lord. And the second thing is, evil has not been found in thee all thy days. You've been a good person. You've never stooped to do a low or bad thing. So, this is the way that she's appealing to David now to give her forgiveness. This is the reasoning that she's using to get David to change his mind about the bad thing he's going to do, about the slaughter he's going to bring about. And so she further says in verse 29, "Yet a man is risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul." Now here she's speaking about Saul. Saul has risen up, and Saul is planning to come against David. He's risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul. And she doesn't call him by name, probably out of respect for the fact that he is still the king of the nation. But she includes this in her speech to David, that she understands that David is in a position in which he is made to have to flee, and he's made to have to defend himself, and he is made very uncomfortable because of this. She realized that he has a lot of stress, a lot of strain put upon him. He's risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul. But the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God. God's going to take care of you. And notice the phrase he uses to describe this. Your soul is going to be bound in the bundle of life. It's as though we had bundled up something that's precious and that we want to take care of, that we don't want to have destroyed or lost. And so we bundle it up so that we can preserve it and take care of it. And here she calls that the bundle of life. Whatever this thing is that's known as life, this bundle of life then is where your soul is. The thing that God wants to preserve, that he wants to take care of, that he's bundled up here, he's put your soul in there with that. And so your soul shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord my God. How comforting it is for us to think that our soul could be bundled in the bundle of life with God. And then she says, "And the soul to thine enemies, them shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling." Your enemies don't have this security that you have. They don't have this protection that God's given you. They're going to be slung out like a stone that's been put in the middle of a sling. It's going to be flung far away from God. No protection, no way that they can be preserved. "And it shall come to pass, when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood carelessly, or that my Lord hath avenged himself." So she uses this approach also on David. She says, when it comes to pass that you're going to have been rewarded, you shall have been rewarded for all the good that you've done, when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel. Remember, there's coming a time when you're going to be the ruler. You're going to be out of this predicament that you're in now. You're not going to be down here in the wilderness in hiding and trying to defend yourself from a marauding king who seeks to kill you. There's coming a time when you're going to have all this reversed. The Lord's going to do according to all the good that he's spoken concerning thee. all the promises he's made, the very fact that you've been anointed to be king, God's going to bring this about. And then you're going to be appointed ruler over Israel. When that comes to pass, many changes are going to take place. You're not going to be in this condition you're in now. Then remember that this should be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, that thou hast shed blood carelessly. Now, if you do this thing, it's going to work on your conscience. In the good times that are ahead, when you are king over Israel and everything's going so well, you're not going to have this thing grieving you. You're not going to have this offense of heart unto you that you have shed blood causelessly, that you have done something wrong, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. Now, if you do this, David, whenever times get better for you, this is going to be a mar upon your character. This is going to be a thing that your conscience is going to continue to plague you with. It's going to be an offense of heart unto you. It's going to be a grief unto you. And if you do not do it, then you won't have that to bother you. You won't have that to trouble you. You won't have that burden to have to bear when things get better for you. And so you see what a powerful argument she's using here. It is very, very strong. And it's something that each one of us should stop and consider when we're going to do some great thing, something that we might be sorry for. Let's stop and think, is it worth it? Do I want to bear this burden for the rest of my life? Do I want to have this thing upon me, plaguing me, and be a cause of grief to me? How much better just not to do it? And how many things have we done in the past that we wish we hadn't have done, that we would not have that pang of conscience now for? And so that's the appeal she makes to David. You won't have this problem hanging over your head if you just don't go through with this thing. And then she finally says, but when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid. When the time comes that you are king, when you've had all these good things happen to you, remember me. Do not forget me, David. I want to be counted among those that have dealt favorably with you, that you will then deal favorably toward. So she concludes her argument here. A very elaborate speech it is, and one that does have quite an effect upon David, for it dissuades him from getting this vengeance that he has planned to get against Nabal. She saves many lives by changing David's mind. She saves much grief on the part of David in a yet future time when he would have this hanging over his conscience. She saves David from doing something wrong, a rash act that he really should not have done. So Abigail truly is a woman of great wisdom and understanding. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.